everybody. Welcome to Pittsburgh Comic Podcast number 68. We got a big crew again, which is good. Lots of opinions, attitudes.
Comic books.
Comic books. Very good. Thank you. So, I'm Colin McMahon, owner of Pittsburgh Comics, and joining me tonight are...
Megan.
Adam Russell.
Donnie.
Joe F.
Matt.
Justin Pinto.
Oh, you're not supposed to give away your whole name.
Justin.
Now they can Google you.
Too late now.
What?
And Chuck.
Mr. Pinto.
Is there new rules?
No, but normally you just, you know, you always want to stay on the down low.
Wait, so start over.
The kids wouldn't know you were here.
It's all right.
They know.
Deal.
It's too late.
I'll put it on the chalkboard tomorrow.
It's not like Dan, who I gave 47 promo posters that he pasted his room with.
Well,
Googling.
Of what?
Just old promo posters that I dug up or never used. So.
All right, Dan.
That school at Ed Ringgold is full of it.
That's probably the most color that room's seen in years.
Otherwise, it's a lovely shade of gray.
Actually, it's either bright white or bright orange.
Orange? Aren't your colors like red, blue, and gold?
I was thinking that too, but then you imagine.
Yeah, but they painted walls orange and white because it keeps your attention. At least that's what they told us when I went there like 20 years ago.
Sure. Okay. Not a lot of news. Marvel already kind of gave all the news for the previews that comes out next week. And nobody really had much to say this week.
So.
Thank you.
So I figured we'd just talk about stuff, whatever anybody wanted to talk about. So I know Joe wants to start off with a recap of the Cincinnati Comic Con. So
Cincinnati Comic Expo.
We'll start with this.
Oh, thank you, Colin. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
This show was awesome. I really wish you guys could have gone. I wish you guys could have experienced it because it was perfect. There's certain shows.
I thought you said Baltimore was perfect.
Baltimore was perfect too, but Baltimore and this shared certain qualities. There's certain shows that have a flair to them that guests and the public pick up on.
Okay.
And when a show is cared for by the people that put it on, and when the volunteers are as helpful and knowledgeable as what they were at this show, it attracts the best guests.
Okay.
And it fills the aisles with people that are really interested in comics. You know, there's three things that make a convention great. That's interacting with the guests, watching the guests interact with each other, and then the general celebration atmosphere that goes along with gathering a mob of comics fans in one place, you know? I mean, we get this every week at Pittsburgh Comics because we have a store where we can gather.
Well, we get the mob.
Yeah. We have a big party. Yeah, every week.
I mean, you gotta realize that there are people with stores that are not as good as Pittsburgh Comics that may only have a chance to interact with other comics fans at shows like this.
They don't have the internet.
I don't know. I don't know what internet.
It's not
you're
always
on,
the same. Yeah.
There's like millions of comic fans online.
Slim Shady.
But all they do
I'm
is
just saying you criticize everything.
What was that? But no, but on the internet, mostly it's all negative. So I will say it's much different face to face.
Yeah. Anyway.
So who was there? Who'd you talk to?
Oh, well, George Perez, number one.
What?
Best guest ever. He makes everybody that talked to him feel like a long lost nephew. George Perez's line was so long, but it was also probably the best managed that I've seen. I've seen him at a few shows now, and this was definitely the best handled. Like, the line was long, but there were volunteers passing out tickets so that you could get in line, get a ticket, experience the show, and return.
Okay, that's always good, because when I look at San Diego and you see people sitting in line for 3 and 4 hours, it's like you're kind of missing everything. It kind of sucks.
He was doing these headshots for people. Check this out. So I bought this Iceman hardcover off of you a few weeks back. Check this out. He drew Iceman inside.
It's very cool.
Did he draw the art in the book, I assume?
Yeah, he had an issue in the book.
So did he take a PFA out against you yet? I mean, you've seen him at, like, how many shows?
That's
you know
funny.
What a PFA is?
That's funny.
Restraining order?
Yeah, I
do you have one yet?
No. Let's see. George Perez is currently working on World's Finest, by the way, sharing art duties with Kevin Maguire.
Yep.
He said he really enjoys doing artwork on New 52, and he's looking forward to continuing that.
Because one of the things we talked about, the only news I saw today was about Liefeld and his editor quitting and him having fun over that. But it's interesting, one of the big things was they were saying editorial interference was the reason Perez quit Superman and Lethal, and some other, it's been referenced that that's why a lot of other people have quit stuff. But it's interesting seeing Perez still working on a DC book and happy doing it. So maybe it wasn't.
Well, maybe it's the art versus the writing.
Could be.
Superman was writing and you had to deal with Grant Morrison's ego and.
Yeah, but it's just interesting that he didn't give up and it didn't sour him as much as it apparently soured Mr. Liefeld.
Well, Liefeld's a tool to begin with. I mean, it's not like this is an unusual behavior for him.
Right, but it's just interesting how, you know, Rich Johnson and stuff were making it sound, you know, it's epidemic and stuff. Well, apparently not if he's still there. You know.
True. You know, who else is there? Georges Janty.
I was going to say that, but I couldn't say his name.
Artist of Buffy.
Upside down.
On the last 5 years. 5 years of Buffy Season 8. Currently, Buffy Season 9's in full swing. Georges is awesome because at conventions, he sells these sketchbooks that are filled with, like, insider info. And then he draws a headshot on the cover. So check these out.
Cool.
I had him draw, like, some of the Buffy characters.
Did you bring one for all of us? Like,
no, he's not giving them out.
They're not free, buddy. You got to go to the show.
What I love with these things, though, is when you see the pencils. So you see, you know, the
construction lines.
Just the work that, you know, so it shows you that he knows what he's doing. And it's not something that he just, it's the same image he writes, draws every time. He actually had to, you know, space out the eyes, make sure they point in the same direction, you know, little things like that.
He puts a sketchbook together every year. And each sketchbook goes along with one of the Buffy storylines. And he puts in special, you know, like the conceptual artwork, character designs, little insider tidbits about working with each different writer.
Pick the hardest one to open. Way to go.
Well, it's resealable. It's easy.
I know.
Mm-hmm. And I asked first.
Do you like P. Craig Russell, Colin?
Yes, I do.
He was there in a rare convention appearance.
Okay, cool.
He worked since Sandman wrapped up. He worked on what he called his magnum opus, which was adapting an opera called The Ring of Nibelung.
Right.
Oh, you read that?
No, but I know of it. Yeah.
He was
a liar.
No.
it was his magnum opus, Adam.
Seen it in previews.
Everybody did.
He's been promoting it. He spent a lot of time these past couple years promoting it. And he was talking about how opera culture, promoting his comic of the opera to opera culture, he noticed so many similar things to comic convention culture, like how, you know, a different class of people, he said that, like, these really rich people will travel all over the world to watch different performances of the Ring of Nibelung, and the people there know each other, and that's kind of like the same way conventions are. You know, you go to enough conventions, you start to see the same people over and over again because they're out there collecting autographs, collecting sketches, going to the different shows. He said that the opera fans did not look down their nose at it at all. They were rather very thrilled that somebody respected the source material and put together a really cool presentation of the story that they liked so much.
Cool.
And, he likened adapting the opera similar to adapting the rich scripts of Neil Gaiman.
Okay.
You know?
So I'll tell you the one thing after looking at this, what I like is there's a lot of text in it.
Mm-hmm.
I read a little bit of it.
That's
but it's
the Buffy
cool.
sketchbook.
Yeah, it's cool that there's text to go along with the pictures because usually the art books or sketchbooks, you just flip through and it's sketch.
Mm-hmm.
There's some text to give you reference, which I really liked.
Behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah. That was cool.
And talking to artists at conventions is a lot like that, where, you know, you might think that the artist just draws what he's told, but actually most artists are really creative people that have a lot of hands, that have their own hands in the setup of the different storylines that they work on, and, you know, they're involved in some of the writing process as well. You know Josh Blaylock?
I know of Josh Blaylock. Only he did Devil's Due, which did okay, and then they just kind of went away.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's the president of Devil's Due.
Right. I remember they had a very public split with Diamond, and he had a money issue paying people back.
Well, they were probably at their most popular when they were doing G.I. Joe.
Right.
Josh did some cool stuff, like he did a character design for Shipwreck, a character design for Storm Shadow, some of the G.I. Joe characters that had popularity, but, you know, in order to tell stories with them in the current day, their suits really needed an update. Anyway, these
Shipwreck
days,
lost his parrot.
Yeah, yeah, man. A bad loss, a bad loss. The parrot, Shipwreck was one of my favorites because of that parrot. Anyway, they currently do a lot of indie stuff. Like, Josh has a comic called Mercy Sparks, which is about a devil girl bounty hunter that's about to come back. And he actually just did a successful Kickstarter in July for a comic, a hardcover comic called Yumiko, Curse of the Merch Girl. That was it was a hardcover graphic novel that was conceptualized to capture the feeling of a music band on the road. It's like about a story about a punk rock band gaining popularity too fast for their own good. And the indie hip hop artist Merce recorded a song that goes along with each of the 10 chapters of the comic.
Okay.
So do you get a CD with the comic?
Yes, you do.
Sweet.
And Josh and Devil's Due are actually, they're presently promoting a Kickstarter campaign for a story called Plume. Still about a week left on it, if anybody wants to jump on that.
Did you back it?
I have not backed it yet.
Are you going to?
Good question. I just checked it out this week. I just talked about it with Josh this weekend, so I'll research it with you guys.
I mean, he's your best personal friend.
Yeah, just I'm a little leery just when somebody, I don't know, he didn't leave me hanging, but all of a sudden when they just went away and unfinished books and things.
Uh-huh.
So.
And not speaking of the art, but I thought that was Devil's Dues, G.I. Joe was one of the worst, one of the worst runs on the book ever.
Chicka chicka Slim Shady. Everything sucks.
I love IDW's run on it.
Yeah. No, actually, you did have something nice to say about George Gianti's book. So
I did, and the art was fine in those books. It just was the story that was terrible.
Mm-hmm. What?
The G.I. Joe, the World War III was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Part of it
was that Devil's Due.
That was Devil's Due. Yeah. Like they had Hack Slash. I don't remember what else they had. Some little stuff. But okay, I see you next.
Bruce Portacio, he's working on creator-owned material with Image again, a story called Non-Humans.
Okay, yeah.
With writer Glenn Brunswick.
I don't know him, but I remember. Yeah, it's got the image like the toys attacking the guy.
Yeah,
on the
toys
cover.
Come to life. Glenn Brunswick toys did the Gray Area with John Romita Jr. Yeah.
I'm excited.
Pay attention.
Aw. Okay. Due out October 3rd.
Okay. That's next week.
Yep. You know what else is due out October 3rd?
AVX 12.
AVX 12.
Yes.
Yeah? Are you excited for it?
I've read it.
It's a thing?
No, because he's a hater.
It ends.
Yeah, I was actually going to say Jeff Darrow's next Shaolin Cowboy work. That's a surprise, right?
It is. Yeah, I don't think I have the previous issues. No.
He got the rights from the Wachowski brothers and did a novel.
Brothers?
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know the guys that did The Matrix?
I know. One had a sex change.
Really?
Yeah.
One did.
What?
Get out. Wow, that's news. So you don't get that dirt on Newsarama.
That's why I was like, I don't know if it's the brothers.
So you got to call it the siblings.
Right. Yeah.
Get out, really?
We're not making this up.
Google it.
Yeah, I honestly didn't know that, but I guess now it's the siblings.
Of the 35 iPhones we have here, I guess somebody could actually Google that.
We're all going to be using the
if
connection
you can spell
at once.
Spell Wachowski.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Autocorrect or something.
I'll spell it for you.
Okay.
All right. Moving on. There's a lot of self-publishers there, like Sean Forney, Stephanie Forney, local artists. Like, something I really like about going
is
to
is that the one that you got that sketch from?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I did get a sketch from Sean Forney.
Oh, I want to see.
What is it of, Joe, since the people...
Dick Grayson, Batman. That's Batman with the Escrima sticks that Dick Grayson used as Nightwing.
That's how you know it is.
But wait, you're cheating. That's from Baltimore.
This is not from Baltimore.
Oh, I thought you showed me one from Baltimore.
No, he got one from another guy's doing... It was more of an action pose.
That was Francesco Francavilla. See, I got a theme going. I get the same thing over and over again.
Harley, Dick, Batman, and...
Black Suit Spider-Man, which is Mask
Wolverine. Oh, I like that.
That's yeah, solid. this is something. These guys are friends with each other, and they like to work on the parchment paper so that they can draw with black and then add highlights.
No, that's cool. I like that, too.
This is Josh Meathers that did the Black Suit Spider-Man.
How's he doing? I know he was sick.
He was sick for a while. He actually just had surgery. He was feeling good. He said that a lot of the pain is gone. And during the time that he was sick, there was time that I saw him do... like one sketch a day, and he was working really fast. You can tell that he was feeling a lot better.
Okay, good.
Let's see what else we got in here. Eric Hodson is a sketch card artist, really popular with some of the convention goers. Oh, you like that? Katie Cook
does
these mini watercolor portraits.
Yeah, isn't she doing My Little Pony?
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
She's gonna do that's it. So cute.
Yeah, katiecandraw.com, I think. Mm-hmm. She's very talented.
Right on. Andy Bennett, Dave Akins. These guys are local to Columbus. Dave Akins does a lot of SpongeBob work.
That's cool.
Yeah, Andy does like.
You can tell. No.
That's why Harley Quinn is square.
Andy does a lot of like gothic, darker, shaded type stuff. Let's see what else we got here.
Oh, that's very cool. Jeff Darrow original.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Look at this little thing he put on the back for me, too.
Pretty sweet. Oh, very nice.
That's himself.
I couldn't make out what that was. I was like, is that a potato?
Very cool. It's a little... He has
kind of like a potato.
It's a little rusty figure. Rusty and the Boy Robot. So that's very cool.
Yeah. So, actually, the best part of all, at the Cincinnati Comic Expo, Dave Akins moderated the Swamp Thing reunion panel.
Oh, yes,
with
yes.
four guests of honor. Steve Bissett, John Turtleman, Rick Vetch, and Tom Yates.
No Alan Moore?
No, Alan Moore didn't make it out. But that's one of the things that they talked about. You know, they did like a career retrospective where, you know, talked about how these guys were in the very first class at the Kubert School together, and how they moved into working in comics, taking any job that they could, and then, you know, they got on the Swamp Thing comic and kind of reconceptualized the look of Swamp Thing. And they were talking about how at the time Alan Moore was this guy, you know, this figure in far off Europe working on 2000 AD and, you know, just doing things that were foreign to them, you know, because they were looking at the comics and doing Miracle Man and saying, how is this guy doing this? How, like, do the writer and artist live together in the same house? Like, how can they find such a synchronicity in the work that they're doing? And they worked with Alan Moore on Swamp Thing, on his very first U.S. comics. And they were talking about what it was like at the time, what it was like to be in the thick of things, and how Alan Moore really brought a new way of doing things, a new way of writing a script, a new way of writing a comic, a way of looking at the story as a mosaic and putting an artist getting an artist involved in the book differently, so that they were on the same page and that they were rather than looking at it linearly, they were looking at the whole story and getting everything assembled in a completely different way. They were talking about how they created John Constantine.
Mm-hmm. And they said that it was a joke. They just kept putting him in the background. They kept drawing Sting in the background.
Yeah. Kind of like they liked Sting from The Police, so they were drawing him into crowd scenes. And then in one of their telephone calls with Alan Moore, they were like, oh, by the way, we've been putting Sting into the story. Why don't you do something with him? And that was where John Constantine originated at. And from there, you know, they fought hard to retain creators' rights to the characters to the point that they still receive royalties for John Constantine.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. They did a lot of other things, like you might really appreciate this, Colin. When they did a story that was not approved by the Comics Code, they refused to budge on it, and Karen Berger allowed it to go direct market only because newsstands were the main outlet for distribution at the time. And, you know, to test the direct market, they said, okay, well, you know what? It's important to the story. We're not going to take this stuff out. We'll put it in the direct market. Sales ended up going up, and it proved that the direct market, it was an early indicator that the direct market had a lot of viability as a sales force. Yeah. And there's some other stuff that they talked about, like the first time painted covers were ever used in a comic was on this Swamp Thing run. And anyway...
Well, no, I mean, they did them back in, like, the old gold keys and stuff, but yeah.
Oh, technicality, Colin. Just saying. All right.
Those great Russ Manning Magnus Robot Fighter covers? Those were awesome.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's my update.
Okay.
What do you guys think?
Sounds good.
Yeah?
Still not going, but...
You know what? You painted such a lovely picture that I would want to go.
There you go. You can take Megan.
Yeah.
All right.
Did I seriously go?
Okay.
All right. Don't mock me.
I'm not mocking.
So what else?
Okay. Well, I just heard we talk about anything we read lately.
What did you read lately?
Me?
you see.
Did you read anything?
Technically, no. I read Black Kiss 2 last night.
Oh,
tell us about
it. I can't really discuss that one.
I like when they did the
I read Talon. I like Talon a lot. Or not a lot. I thought Talon was good. It was interesting. And I forget who I was talking to with earlier. And I said, when I got to the end, it makes me want to read number one and just see where this is going. It has very much of a... like a Winter Soldier, Scarlet Spider kind of feel to it. Just guy kind of on the road, not on the runs per se, but just on his own, and we're just going to see where his adventures go. That was good. Yeah. It wasn't what I was expecting.
I was hesitant on it. I think did they have this in mind, or was it just kind of, oh, everyone liked Court of Owls, let's make a town.
Oh, yeah. No, that definitely came out of that.
I'm very skeptical on how good it will be long term. But it was interesting. Like you said, it doesn't really tell you a whole lot. It sets up a lot of information. Yeah. It's kind of good for 0 months since 1 through 12 isn't out yet. So they are setting up the character and giving you information before they just turn you loose on it, as opposed to the other 52 books where we're getting.
That's what I like best about the 0 books with this new wave, because they came out at the same time.
Yeah,
at least gave you an introduction. That way the number one issue really is getting you right into the game. So.
Yeah, like I like the Sword and Sorcery, or Sword of Sorcery last week I enjoyed. I like the backup story but more than the front story.
I liked
Justice League, and I liked Phantom Stranger. I liked how those tied together.
I thought Justice League was interesting because people were like, oh, now Shazam's going to join the Justice League. I'm like, not yet. Got a ways to go before.
The backups?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They just did this so they could tell the Archer story about Shazam.
Which I thought was good because Matt and I had been, asking me.
I'd buy his own issue if they had it.
Yeah.
At least there's backups. As long as there's still backups.
Matt had been asking me. Yeah. He had been asking me about the Shazam Council that we saw in Phantom Stranger. I'm like, I don't know. And then the Justice League kind of explained why we don't know who they were. Okay.
But you can ruin it.
No, I'm not ruining it. Just it explains why they're not around anymore.
Yeah, to ruin from that.
Yeah, it's my bad. I read 3 books last week. 4.
I think that was the cool thing about it.
But all Marvel.
They were. You know how I sort my books, so that was a pretty safe
one alphabetically. One week, his top book was Batman.
What?
It was second. The Punk Rock Jesus.
One, Batman second, and then like AVX 10 was like third.
11, yeah. That's just because there was like 8 AVX times
you wanted
that
to put
week,
them all together.
So I wanted to read all the AVX, but I wanted to read Batman, so... So Venom was terrible.
It was funny. Venom has been plummeting in sales and polls, and I've had more people hand that back lately. So I'm kind of hoping they're ending that one.
So my two choices now are to keep reading it, I can read Minimum Carnage.
Right.
Or I drop that and Scarlet Spider. So guess what I chose.
Keep reading it to get Minimum Carnage.
Oh, drop both.
Dropping both.
Surprise.
Oh. Man, dropping Marvel books left and right. Look at that.
Gonna get down to my DC numbers.
Don't worry, they'll relaunch them all.
Give me more money to spend on Image and Dark Horse.
Dark Horse.
If there's any way to get some bitter old man to stop reading your comics, it's get him to cross over with things he doesn't want to read.
I read both of them now.
Yeah,
but they're just Colin Bunn has just ruined this book to the point where it's not worth reading anymore.
It's your new Fred Van Lente.
He is. I mean, he took a big old massive dump on Rick Remender's legacy of that book.
The new Robbie Williams.
So now, what did you think of the Rick Remender run?
I loved it.
What was good about it?
Up until the Spider Island tie-in. It was a great book.
See, that's all I read was that. And I'm like, I read number one, and then I read the Spider Island tie-in.
It was a new take. They recruited Flash Thompson. So you had the whole aspect of him having the power to have his legs back. And it was a military thing now. Like, the government had control of it. It was just a totally different take on Venom from what I've read. And that's why I liked it. It was kind of a... It started out as kind of like an action hero book. Like, more of a... It
just seems so funny that Flash Thompson has his own book.
There is that.
Why would you...
And now there's some new reporter chick in it, and... I got so lost, and there's the Monsters of Evil, and there's like the
That's when I quit getting it.
Now, in the Spider Island crossover, did Flash Thompson, Venom,
run into Eddie Brock anti-venom at all?
He's not anti-venom anymore.
Oh, he's not? What is it?
Didn't he get drained?
Yeah, he lost that to end
Spider Island.
He did run into him in the past couple. Well, I stopped buying like 2 or 3 months ago. But he did run into him like maybe 4 or 5 months ago.
Supposedly, I thought he was supposed to play a part in Minimum Carnage. And I can't think of anything else he's gonna be
in. Think that there was a real cool Flash Thompson Venom scene in Carnage USA. Because Carnage doesn't have legs after being ripped in half.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And then Flash Thompson doesn't have legs after losing them in Iraq. So there was a time where Cletus Cassidy and Flash Thompson's symbiotes both left them, and Flash Thompson and Cletus Cassidy fought each other, and neither of them had legs.
Now, I did like both of the Carnage miniseries, which is unusual, because Zeb Wells, to me, is a...
Yeah, he kind of...
He's a B-list writer.
Like, throwaway stories.
But I think the art on that really sold it with, was it Clayton Crane?
Clayton Crane, yeah. Plus the story that he wrote for that, the way that it continued kind of made it vital. He made it vital in his own lineage.
Was Carnage USA the first one or the second one?
The second.
That one was a little weird with the symbiote squad, where there was like 6 different symbiotes or something powering.
Mm-hmm.
That just was a little weird.
Powering soldiers.
They did a lot of symbiotes.
Was there ever like 6 symbiotes in the past?
There, I don't know if there's been that many, but there was like Toxin. And,
okay, yeah, that's what they were referring. I just don't know.
Yeah, there was even a big video game after that.
Venom Lethal
What was it?
Venom Lethal Protector.
Okay.
Miniseries. There was like released a bunch of symbiotes. Yeah.
I think they were really Venom characters, more than Spider-Man characters, because Venom took on his own book.
Yeah, because they were like red. They were different colors.
You're talking about in the Carnage USA?
Yeah.
I think that was the Toxin symbiote being split up or something.
Yeah,
they did. They did split it up.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned that. I do remember that now.
Who's the creative team on Venom Carnage?
Oh, I can't remember now.
Oh, it's what are those two?
Was it Zeb and Clayton?
It's Bun and the two on the Fear Itself books that were after Fear Itself, Fearless, and
the guy that's writing Scarlet Spider
Nick Fury
right now.
Story.
And I can't remember who that was.
What was that Nick Fury story called? It was so awful. I don't remember the name.
Battle Scars.
Battle Scars. Yeah, that group's working on Minimal Carnage.
Trade paperback available at Pittsburgh Comics.
That's why I really don't have that much faith in that. Awful.
Colin, who's writing Scarlet Spider?
Was it Yost?
Yeah, Chris Yost.
Yost. Christopher Yost.
I don't think he's doing it anymore.
It was Brian Stegman on art, and then he changed.
Oh, wait.
He moved to a book that got canceled.
What did he move to? Oh, Colin, Mr. Negative showed up in Avengers last week.
Is Colin a fan of Mr. Negative?
He just made a comment last week that he hasn't seen Mr. Negative. He's like, we have all these great villains like Mr. Negative. We haven't seen him in months. And then I go home and read Avengers, and there's like this little one-off story with Mr. Negative in it.
That's interesting.
That guy just disappeared. Dan Slott made that character and then just kind of...
I liked him as a character.
I did too. That's the whole thing. That's my biggest complaint with Dan Slott. I don't mind him as a writer. I just don't like how he makes all these characters.
And then dumps them.
And then dumps them. You know.
He could dump Alpha and I wouldn't care.
Yeah. We need more Carly Cooper is what you're saying.
Truthfully, I didn't mind the Alpha story. I just actually finished reading this issue in it. I don't know if anybody else read it, so I don't want to ruin anything for him. But it wasn't... it ended in a good way. And I liked the message about the whole book was that you got to see two versions of what Peter could have become without Aunt May and people in his life. And you got to see the opposite side of this kid, this Andrew McGuire kid,
come on.
You got to love that name. Be a little
more creative.
Yeah. And you can't. That's what I thought was cool about it. Just seeing, you know, this character, what happened. He wasn't really his sidekick per se, but, you know, that's the only reason I really liked that. I didn't think it was that bad of an idea. Not as much as I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a lot worse than that. Because when you say Spider-Man sidekick, I was just like, come on, that's stupid.
I hate talking about stories that people hate. Because there's so much stuff Why do we spend any time at all talking about stories we don't like?
Well, because we're trying to be well-rounded.
I don't think so. I'm sick of talking about stories people don't like. No.
Technically, I mentioned that I liked the story that I thought I was going to hate. That's what I was saying.
But I honestly didn't even read the second part because of that Spider-Man sidekick thing.
Yeah.
I was annoyed.
But I didn't mind the idea because when you finally get through into the book, you realize that this isn't going to become a permanent thing.
Uh-huh.
It was to tell a story.
Yeah, the second issue.
It was to show a message, really.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, this lot. I mean, somebody will reintroduce him.
I do say I really like the cover of the current.
Well, they kind of leave it that he can be reintroduced in this issue, and you'll see that in the issue.
So what does everybody think they're going to be doing with Spider-Man, with 700?
I liked what Newsarama surmised. I thought that was kind of neat.
What was
that? I think he's going to become six-armed Spider-Man again.
Ooh.
Especially because
Dr. Octopus is...
Right, ooh. Right. They're going to, like, get grafted to him or something
sweet.
Like that. Yeah.
That would be sweet.
And also because you have the Morbius being... The book being reintroduced with 699.1.
Uh-huh.
and Morbius' first introduction was back in 100 when he got the six-arm, so...
Oh, I thought you were talking about the price that was going to be a $7 book. I was like...
700, I think, is $6.99
well,
or something.
Fine, but
no, there's this... Yeah, the six.
And the Lizard's going to be part of it with his arm deal.
Right, so... Uh-huh. But yeah, I thought that was... I went,
Can Doc Ock give him an arm? Could we grapple
maybe
on
before
one
he,
of Doc
maybe
you
before he kills
these,
off.
These bad guys, you know, he would have teamed up with him, been like, here, you can have an arm by now. Wouldn't that have been nice?
I mean, wouldn't Reed Richards just fix it so he could turn it into the Croc? Because the whole reason he does it is to be
Reed
to get
Richards.
His arm
frankly,
back.
I find Reed Richards to be useless.
He's a little pompous.
Yeah.
He all these things
all
he could
these,
fix and he doesn't.
All these things he doesn't do, but he screws up more than he does.
Because he uses powers to make Sue happy.
I like how he...
They're still together, he must.
I like how he walks out of the Illuminati in his crazy miserable. Trench coat. He has to have a trench coat on for some
Did you see the scene when he was in his white suit and it's like Black Bolt? Who else? Doctor Strange was wearing a black suit. Everyone's wearing black and Reed Richards has the white suit and he's like, hey, I didn't get the memo. What's going on?
Yeah.
What book was that in?
That probably was Illuminati, because that's all those characters. Because, yeah, they all did change their costumes. Doctor Strange has that black and red costume now.
Uh-huh.
Because he's not Sorcerer Supreme anymore, so he can't have that signature costume, I guess.
But I was reading, because I was looking through stuff, doing the order, and in one of the last Avengers issues, it looks like Dr. Voodoo comes back.
Yeah,
it was on a cover.
It's not the Doctor Voodoo.
Oh, it's a different Doctor Voodoo.
No, it's his brother that was in his head.
Oh,
he swore revenge at the end of that book.
Oh yeah,
that
did happen.
Yeah,
I'm glad Bendis is wrapping that storyline.
Yeah,
his brother was dead.
He is.
This one's from his head.
Something.
Yes. Yes.
Remember, he used to talk to himself. He used to talk to himself in the book. It was.
Did they ever do anything like who are you talking to?
Yeah.
I seem to recall them.
I believe it was What You Talking About, Willis. I think
that was... wrong show. That was Willis, and that was Gary Coleman.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God.
Justin!
That wasn't Jarvis.
What have you read lately that you liked? And it doesn't even have to be a recent book. I know you're behind.
Well, I'm current in some books.
Okay.
My goal is to stay current. I'm actually kind of, as we're talking about all these books, and somebody's mentioning Avengers, of which I own every issue... Which
how many have you read?
30-something, right?
Yes.
And I have read precisely one.
Okay. What a ride you have ahead of you.
I was going to say zero.
It was the AVX tie-in.
I read the AVX tie-in that they told me was good, so I read it. Uh-huh. Was Vision in that tie-in? Was that the Vision tie-in?
No, that the
was
point the, one?
Wasn't that the 27.1 Vision tie-in?
No, it was Xavier being the most powerful telepath.
I didn't read that one. I read the Vision tie-in.
Okay,
well, it took place right after 9 or 10 or something.
But I'm looking forward to Marvel now because like, I like to get it on the ground floor and I can keep reading until I get like 2 weeks behind and then I'm like, I'll never catch up.
Wait till the next relaunch.
Yeah.
Just waiting here.
Just keep the set going. But I have been enjoying... I've been down on Batman for like the past 3 issues. I just feel like ever since the Court of Owls conclusion, like the last issue and then the Harper Row issue... And then the Zero issue. They're fine. They're good. They're not, I mean, but they're just kind of... I'm waiting for a story to take place again.
Next month.
Month, Joker.
So, and I was thinking about that, too. Death of the Family. I was, and it looks like it's going to cross into all the Bat books again.
Yeah.
I would like it if it was just...
But I think, like, they're going to do it like Court of Owls. I don't think you have to get them all.
You don't have to. The Court of Owls were all standalone, and they were all fine, but I just kind of...
I don't know if they were all fine. There were a lot of terrible tie-ins.
They didn't... You didn't need them. They didn't Shut do anything. Up. They didn't interrupt much of anything else, but I wish it would just kind of stay with Batman in the Batman book. But yeah, Joker's coming back, so I'm looking forward to that. But I've been enjoying Winter Soldier.
Okay.
But then I got depressed because I heard it was canceled at 15. So Brubaker said he was off it. But then sales went up.
Because of the movie.
But now Brubaker's not coming back. So I'm like, when's Brubaker done at 15?
Yeah.
Jason Latour is actually a really cool creator.
Yeah.
Jason Latour.
Yeah, what has he done besides...
This is his first time writing. He's done artwork on Wolverine for years.
I've read him writing two things. He wrote a Punisher Max book, one-off, and he wrote Loose Ends from 12 Gauge Press.
Oh, interesting.
Which never finished, but was an awesome book for the first three issues.
He had some really interesting artwork on backup stories in Wolverine. Ever since Wolverine had the relaunch where he was in hell, Jason Latour was doing these storylines where it was like Wolverine was never in costume. It was a really interesting color palette. Like everything followed one tint. It was like a real noir style storyline.
Well, that'll be good for, well, he's writing, not doing art, but Winter Soldier and that feel, that noir feel, and the on the run, like you said, Colin, earlier, the on the run, the secret agent. I've really enjoyed that.
I really hope they don't change the artist,
though. I hope they don't. I don't want them to change anything with the book. I like it the way it is, but I understand things get
mixed up. Was really funny because we were discussing on the Facebook page about him, and I'm like, yeah, nobody knows who he is except for Black Widow and blah, blah, blah. And then I go read it like an hour later, and it's like, okay, Steve knows, Hawkeye knows, and I forget who else.
Yeah, I thought that was the big thing that nobody knew, and now
lots of people are finding out.
Wolverine
came in, didn't he?
Yeah, it was Hawkeye. It was Hawkeye, Wolverine, and Steve Rogers, and it's like
Tony's not far behind.
Hawkeye can't keep his mouth shut. I mean, Spider Woman.
He'll tell Spider Woman. She'll tell Hydra. Then it's over. Yeah,
she was. The last issue of Avengers was pretty good with her and Hawkeye. Mr. Negative.
But the one thing that I've been enjoying the most, and I never thought in a million years, after reading the 90s, is Valiant stuff. Like, I read Harbinger from the 90s,
right,
and it was awful.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kevin. It was awful. You're
just like, are you now? Oh, did it suck? Did it not age well?
It aged horrifically.
Now, would it have been good back at the time?
I have no idea. I can't imagine if it would have been good back in the day.
Uh-huh.
Kevin says it was great back in the day. Was it like, I mean, there's all these like catchphrases of the 90s, and like they keep saying nothing beats a bud and all this stuff. But even the story itself, of those kids, is just so awful. I mean, they call the one girl Zeppelin because she's heavy, and it's just like they don't seem to ever like each other. And it's like, it was just, I mean, it was just, I it took me literally, it was like an 8-issue trade that I borrowed from Kevin, and it literally took me probably, of actually reading, I sat on it for probably 3 months.
Yeah.
And it probably took me 6 months to read 8 issues. Because it was like, I can only do one. And then I had to take a break for like 2 weeks. I couldn't go back to it.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Now, New Harbinger, New Harbinger was the one I didn't like, but Exo, I like.
Okay.
Bloodshot is awesome.
Yeah, I like Bloodshot.
And Archer and Armstrong was just so confusing. It was good.
Okay.
It was like
that's
such
how I feel
like,
about Morrison. I don't know what's going on, but I enjoy it.
And I don't like Morrison, but I like this was just like they all seem to involve time traveling too for some reason. Everyone's going back and forth in time, but it's been a very enjoyable storyline that have no real. It's been like slow. It's been like one a month.
Yeah.
They released like 2 books in a month, and they released 3 books in a month. And Shadow Man's coming next, right, I think, and stuff. But it's been a very. I mean, I read a lot online about how everyone's like, the Valiant does it right. It's the great. But I mean, it's just been. It's nice to get storylines where they can't really go anywhere.
Right.
Like, Exo Manowar can't go anywhere. Like, he is just Exo Manowar. You don't have to worry about, oh, Winter Soldier's coming, and then, oh, when's Hawkeye going to get here? When's Wolverine coming in? When's Winter Soldier going to join the Avengers for a crush? You know what I mean? It's like, you don't have to ever worry about that. It's just, the books are just...
Well, I think that's a timing thing, right? Because wasn't Valiant known as one of the tightest continuities ever?
Maybe.
In the 90s? Because
one guy wrote everything.
Well, that was Kevin said...
Tim Shooter wrote everything.
Because I asked Kevin about that, and he said that in the 90s, it was one of the tightest continuities.
Up to a point. Yeah.
I mean, still comic books, but...
Up to a point, meaning a point in time when Jim Shooter left.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one of the selling points of it.
I wonder if it's going to be
everything linked together.
Yeah. I loved Archer Armstrong and Bloodshot.
Archer and Armstrong was incredibly interesting, and I wanted to read two before I came, but I just ran out of time.
Yeah, so I'll tell you.
Yeah, I haven't read two yet.
Disappointing part of two is they nicknamed the terrorist group or the religious group or whatever the 1%. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I Twitter got him. I was like, please tell me that's a reference to something of the 90s. And he's like, no, that's just a bad choice.
So wait, now Exo Man of War was one of my favorites back in the day. What is it about the current Exo Man of War that captured you?
I mean, I just think it's just an enjoyable story. Like, we talk so much about like all these books that are going on. And Colin has said this before about, you know, we just want. Just tell us a story. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be huge. It doesn't have to be AVX. It doesn't have to be, you know, the Court of Owls. It doesn't just give us a story. Give us something that's just these characters and this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, Exo, of the three that I read Archer, Bloodshot, and Exo. Exo is probably my least favorite, but I still enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But just, I mean, you know.
Cary Nord artwork on that, right?
Nothing. When I first started reading it,
yeah.
And I picked it up and opened it, I was like, this is not at all what I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. There was not one thing about it that I thought that story was going to be. I mean, you see him, you see the cover, and that's all you really saw of him, and then you open it up and you're like, why am I in Rome?
Mm-hmm.
Why? And not just why am I in Rome, but why am I in ancient Rome? And like, you know, in like 400, whatever it was, I forget the year that they said it was, but I mean, you're like, what is going on, you know? And the one thing that I love that Valiant does, and Marvel does it, but Valiant does it better, is on that cover, you open the cover, the whole back of the cover is, here's what's happened so far.
Ooh.
And it's not just like, I think the last like six issues of AVX have been the story so far, and it's like the same six paragraphs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except the last sentence changes for what happened in 10 to 11. But they give you actually like, I mean, you open the cover to the first issue, and they give you a history of like what's going on that you needed to know.
Yeah.
To read the issue, like, here's what you need to know going into this that doesn't ruin it for you, but tells you the pertinent information, so you're not just guessing, like, why does this guy Bloodshot heal himself? What does he do? And
Colin,
different things like that.
You need to get your DC rep to explain why they don't do that.
Yeah, I'll ask him. I sent him a question. He's out for the holidays, but...
The holidays?
The Jewish
Christmas
holidays.
Already?
No.
Yom Kippur.
Yeah. But I had a question about the Amethyst Showcase, so I'll ask him that. The Amethyst Showcase has, it's like 700 pages, but it leaves out the last five issues of the run. I'm like, why?
You couldn't go to 7?
Right, I'm 80. Like, why couldn't you do another, you know, to finish it out? And it ends, the last page says, to be continued. I'm like, what are you doing here? You're not going to come out
pages?
With Volume 2.
Volume 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
100.
Right, so I have that question out to him.
I think that's one thing that DC should do, because, I mean, Dan and Matt have talked, like, when you read, I don't read that much, but, like, when you read, like, the loads that some of you guys read, you're reading 30 books a month, 40 books a month, you're like, and especially if you're reading, like, 8 Bat titles, you're like, well, what was Batman doing in Dark Knight? What was Batman doing? And sometimes I pick up Batman and Robin, and I really like it, and I have to think for, like, a minute, okay, wait, where was I? Mm. What is going on in this Bat book? And if you could just open the cover and said last time, and I mean, it doesn't have to be a whole lot.
Yeah.
I think that's...
The one thing I've noticed about DC, though, is I think part of the reason they don't do it is a lot of the stories, the first two or three pages, are kind of recapping the last issue within the story. I've just noticed that a lot of their books lately, that the first couple pages of the story are kind of getting you back into what happened last issue. It's kind of like when you watch bad reality TV and they, like,
yeah.
Come back from commercial, and they show you the last 20 seconds of before the commercial.
Right, right.
That's kind of what I feel like the first three pages of a lot of DC books are, is that.
Yeah, I don't remember enough of it. I can't remember the details well enough of a lot of the books.
Well, you read a book every 6 weeks, so, I mean...
Well, that's not true. I do read books like they are trades. Like, I will save up, like, right now I'm reading Animal Man and Swamp Thing from the beginning, so I've got, like, 13 issues of Animal Man and Swamp Thing. But by the time I have read 13 issues of each, by the time I read 26 books in a week, you know, I will. It'll all make sense as I'm reading it, but then to try to think back to Swamp Thing 3, like, what happened to Swamp Thing 3?
Oh,
like,
I agree. I mean, they definitely should.
I mean, it all starts to run together at a certain
point.
Put
it in there. I don't know if they've ever done it. Now, a lot of indie books, like, it's hit or miss when you get to Image. I think it's really up to the creator at that point.
Yeah, well, Image is all creator-driven, yeah.
But I wish, I mean, that should be, like, an industry standard.
But it has to be done well. Like, there's nothing worse than when it's done not well. Because it is, they do count it, like Colin said, they do count it as part of, like, your page. Like, if right. they give you a recap page, it's a part of the page, it's a part of the book. So I don't want it to be, like, wasting space. I don't want it to just be, and here's what happened last time.
I love the X Factor ones where it's like,
right, three but that's sentences, very personable. Yeah.
And then Peter David's like, my daughter Ariel's going back yes. to college. And by the way, and this was literally what he wrote in the last one, was yeah. like, by the way, taking her out to dinner and asking her for X Factor backstory is probably not going to win her over. I mean, it was like,
no.
That was speaking of X Factor, that book's been great.
It is. I haven't read the last one yet, but the one before about Polaris, that was very good.
Yeah. And this one just continues on. The only thing I hate about it, and they do it in a lot of comics, is like when they're writing a Scottish person, instead of writing you, they write ye, and I'm like, just write you. This is so damn annoying.
It drives me
put it in
crazy.
The parentheses, so it just...
Yeah, just
oh, this
it,
is translated.
Just translated put it in from Scottish. Italian, like, yeah. Translated from Scottish.
This means you.
I've never read a Journey into Mystery book
mm-hmm.
or an actual Thor book of any kind. Do they write every time Thor speaks, do they write in that cursive? Like, every
oh,
single
the,
time. That is, like, the most annoying thing
oh,
ever.
You want to read really bad version of that?
He speaks cursive. Yeah.
The 12th issue of Shade has all of this inner dialogue, text boxes, all in this real heavy cursive script. It's black on brown box. It's just like...
I hate any lettering that looks like typeface.
But I'm just getting tired of reading it.
Like, a lot of
like reading
a
it, like,
lot of Batman backstories like that had that like cursive writing and those jagged text box of back in the day.
I think I can picture it now.
Don't make it hard to read. I don't need this to be difficult to read. I'm already cutting out words by not reading actual books.
Anything that reminds me that machines work on the books, I tend to skip.
I see Thor's, when I get to a Thor bubble, it just drives, AVX, as soon as Thor talks, I'm just like, everything looks like a capital G. It's like everything's got like it goes backwards. It's cursive. It's like,
but most letterers are so good that it looks written, even though it's a font. Most colorists are so good that it looks hand colored, even though it's computer colored.
Well, you know, that's the thing about, and Justin and I talked about this, about Winter Soldier.
Yeah,
I think overall, I mean, the writing's fantastic. The art is Butch Geist, Juice, whatever.
Jackson Butch Geist. Yeah.
How do you say it?
I'd say Geist. Yeah.
And then, and it's not usual that I notice the colors, but Betty Brewster, her husband's Mitch something, is
Lucky
doing
Bruce?
The color.
Breitweiser.
Yeah.
Breitweiser, yeah. Well, I mean, she was the Marvel exclusive colorist. Remember they did that? They announced that? That was kind of amazing.
Yeah.
But she's one of two or three colors that I'll actually notice.
And Winter Soldier art, I mean, it is really well done. But, I mean, you get what, like, appears to be, and I say this not to be negative, but, like, sloppy pages. There's so much stuff going on some of those pages. When you get to, like, a splash and it's, like there'll be in a warehouse. And it'll be, like, the whole warehouse is the scene. It'll be a box and another box and another box. But there'll be so much stuff going on.
Now, does it fit with the story, though?
It fits great. I mean, it works out great. It's awesome. It's really, really well done, and I don't ever feel like it's distracting. I don't ever feel like it's overbearing or taking over the page. I mean, like I said, Thor's text bubble annoys me incredibly more than these, like...
So you're saying, like, the noir, sketchy, artistic style of Winter Soldier fits with it, but, like, the cold, you know, calculated typeface of Thor's dialogue. You aren't on board.
Marvel does it with a lot of characters. Yeah. A lot of Marvel characters, like the Iron Man has his special text bubble that's yellow because it's mechanical, and you know what I mean? Like, they have a lot of special text bubbles for their characters.
You know, it's funny that you never think about when you're reading it, but the text, the lettering really does make a huge difference. Like, Deadpool's lettering, I think, some of the best because of the way they do the white and the yellow, like...
Yeah, it's like he's talking to himself.
Like, inner monologue, outer monologue. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, I just like that. And, you know, some books are hard to read. Like, go look at Shade 12. It's one of the hardest books I've read since, like, the Kree-Skrull War.
I just read The Last X-Force, and I enjoyed Deadpool's dialogue in that.
Yeah.
Oh, was I talking out loud? Donnie, what did you read lately? Like, well, dislike,
let's see what
you're reading unlike.
Right, he's reading House. He just read House of M.
You just read it? Well, I know you read the last two pages of Game of Thrones.
Well, like, outside Justice League, that was... I mean, I didn't really know a thing about Shazam or Captain Marvel before any of the New 52, but between the backstories and the Zero issue, that was really good. Daredevil, it's kind of like, you know, he's going to come out of it all right, because he's been painting him happy the whole time, so he's not really crazy. But it's still good.
He might be crazy. I mean, that would be the ultimate setup of that first arc, right? As if, like...
But you got to give him credit then, because what is it, like 12, 13 issues making him happy, and then, yeah, oh,
but,
wait.
But was Wade planning this, like, mental breakdown since 1? Because yeah. I remember Colin being really excited about Daredevil, because he was happy again.
Yeah.
Like, he was normal, he wasn't, like, getting pooped on. And...
like the one customer said, put Daredevil on my list, because I finally read one and didn't need to take pills and drink a fifth of Jack Daniels.
But, like, now he's...
But it looks like he was wrong, yeah, he's going to drop that book now.
Yeah, I was going to say, but now he's finding, like, his dad's skull in his desk drawer, but did he really...
That's pretty morbid.
Right, and then he imagined his wife, who's his girlfriend, who's a mental institution, thought she was there.
Yeah, I'd love that throwback to...
I don't think he is. I think somebody's bastard with that.
Probably, but, I mean, who knows after that torture in Latveria?
Yeah, that's true.
What they did.
I didn't even think of that, yeah.
But that was when he came back. Then he found the skull in there.
Right.
Right. So, or Foggy found it, wasn't it?
Yeah. So he already found it before he was even in Latveria. So, yeah. I thought that, too, yeah.
No, that's right. Sorry, I'm confused.
Because the thing where his dad's grave was dug up was before Latveria.
Yeah, that was a bad couple issues.
Yeah.
I hope that's really setting up something, but when he's surfing the coffins through the sewers was kind of hunting down Mole Man.
Dancing with the corpse.
Are you expecting a Mole Man Daredevil story?
That would have been fantastic.
When was the last time Mole Man
team
was
up.
Seen?
A team up? Yes. Mole Man, Daredevil?
Two guys that can't see. There you go.
Captain America, Mole Man, team up.
I do love how when he was surfing with the coffins down there, though, he's like surrounded by monsters. And he doesn't... He just sees them as being like part of the cave.
Mm. Yeah, Mole Man was in a Spider-Man whatever, right? Wasn't he the bad guy that Alpha took down?
Yeah, it was recently.
I've only read like
that was some sort of monster. Like, I mean, it's a subterranean monster of some sort. Like, but yeah.
You
it wasn't
like
exactly.
No, no.
Oh.
You said Spider-Man, and I think I've read, I'm going to say 3 Spider-Man comics in my life, and one was from like, some was back in the day, and just writing is just not... What's the famous Green Goblin finds out who he is? Number is that?
39.
Yeah, I was.
I only read the most classic episode. When I do stuff like that, my wife just rolls her eyes. She's like, "You can remember this, but you can't remember, you know, to call to do this." It's like,
well, honey, yeah, you know. Well,
Colin, do you think like a certain like Spider-Man as a character appeals to a certain demographic?
I
don't know.
I just don't. Yeah, I read Spider-Man 39 because it was at the back of a trade. I just read it.
Okay.
It was at the back of some trade. It was part of the Norman Osborn trade.
I can go into that.
It was just so old. It's just, anything that's that old just doesn't read well nowadays.
Okay.
So it's just so different. But then Dan made me read Spider-Man point. Well, it was a point one. Mm-hmm. So it's supposed to be a perfect jumping on point. It had Morbius. Morbius was working in a lab, or somebody was in a lab, and they were trying to. And I read the whole thing, and I'm like, I just don't even know what this is.
Was that when Venom?
No, he was working for somebody.
That might have been a second.
But I just don't like Spider-Man the movies. I like Spider-Man the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've enjoyed almost all of them, except Spider-Man 3 is such a train wreck. That last one. But the character of the comic, I just don't like him. He just nothing appeals to me. And that's why Joe's question was like, do you think Spider-Man appeals to certain people?
I do.
And not others.
Only because, Spider-Man was always the loner, the loser. So I think that appealed to the kids who felt that way. And here he is. Wow, he got bitten by a spider, and look what he's doing. And
see, Pinto, that's because you were popular.
Yeah, right. So you were popular. The rest of us were the loner losers. So.
To me, I always liked Spider-Man because he was like the loner loser that came out on top, got a hot wife.
But it never worked out well. You know, the Parker luck.
I was going to say, to me, he always seems like... It always ends terribly.
For the modern Spider-Man is, ever since Brand New Day, they kind of flipped it back to the Spider-Man that always loses.
Yeah. How about it because of the cartoon?
He's also loved by kids that were had arachnid bites and accidents.
Accidents?
Yeah. Arachnid bites.
Is that a common problem?
Yeah. Yes.
Maybe in Cannonsburg.
bitten by spiders.
Maybe in Canada.
Peter's Township.
Come on, there's kids in New York with Spider Island.
Maybe in West Virginia.
Bed bug bites.
But what do you read?
Me?
Yeah.
I read Walking Dead. Walking Dead 102. And I thought that was a good issue.
It was, but I'm confused. Only because the solicit for 103, and even that's the last issue of the trade, and it says for 103, it's Rick's no longer in charge. And I'm thinking back to 102 going,
The thing about Rick is Rick's screwed up.
Well, he kind of did defer at the end of 102 to everybody.
Right.
He said, we need to just give up and give it to these people. And maybe that's what they're alluding
right.
to. He's no longer in charge and, like, defiant. He's deferring to what
okay.
Negan.
Because I was thinking more about the very end of the issue.
Yeah, but he
didn't. Well,
but I guess,
secret. Like, he
always
said that
the whole
so
thing
people.
About Rick is nobody can trust Rick. Because Rick, even though he'll say, yeah, I don't want to be the leader, he takes over as the leader at all times. Unlike, they always compared him to a character, and if you've seen Lost, like Jack, who never wanted to be the leader in this whole thing, but people looked at him as, you're the leader, you know. He doesn't do that. Rick doesn't do that. He's actually does things behind people's backs. He just takes over
super,
as being
Rick is super bossy and
leader.
Super and like a super manipulator planner, because he's always got like three plans going on at all times. And I mean,
and we're also getting to a point where Carl, the funny thing about Carl you can see is that he's the true survivor of this apocalypse.
Carl's a sociopath.
Well, I think, but this world created him, turned him into
crazy.
Yeah, well, and this world has turned him into what he needs to be to survive. I think, in a way, and I was talking to Nick not too long ago about this. In a way, Nick used the example as he's the ultimate survivor. Because he's growing up in this world. He understands how it works. He's seen death. He's seen what he has to do. And he doesn't, know anything.
He was basically just old enough to not be a detriment to everybody around him.
Yeah. But these other people, the adults.
But old enough to pick up on everything that was going
exactly.
on also.
And these
to have no recollection of what it was like to be a normal kid, really. Because he was, like, how old when this thing started? Led the movie?
Yeah, very young. I think he was, like, 6, 7
I was
going to
say, like, 5?
Yeah,
6,
he was very
7,
young.
Like, young enough that he has no recollection of really what he used to do.
Yeah.
And he, you know, everything when you're 5, 6, or 7 is like that day.
But everyone else, the adults, see it as, you know, things are going to get normal again, and it's about time.
Carl doesn't even want it to become normal. Carl doesn't even know what normal is. Carl's whole life, Carl's whole existence that he can remember basically revolves around this.
There is no normal. When they moved him into whatever
normal.
The village was, he felt uncomfortable because that wasn't normal.
Yeah, he didn't want to play with the kids.
But he's right. Guns. It was kind of it's a show because really on the outside of that fence. It wasn't normal, you know. You can act it all you want, but that's what makes him an ultimate survivor, though, this whole thing. None of them, any of them besides Carl, really understand what they have to do to survive because he's lived with it. So I don't know. A lot of this issue kind of brought up it wasn't, like, the best issue out there. It showed you a few things. It showed you a little bit more about Rick, and it made me wonder more about Rick.
I really think they poured a lot of the story that they would have put into 101 or 102 into 100 just because of the number.
Yeah.
I really feel like it didn't have the typical pacing? Like it didn't have the typical pacing is a good way of saying it of the 6-issue trades that every Walking Dead trade basically has the same pacing. Every Walking Dead, you never know when the issues are because they don't put the covers, they don't put anything in it.
Yeah.
You just read it. It's like one story. And this story, you got to the pinnacle of it much earlier than you normally do in the typical trade. But I think they really did a lot of that just because of issue 100.
The only thing I dislike about what they're doing with this issue and leaving it at the end saying that Rick has another plan that nobody knows about, they've done that so many times in this story.
Well,
they've always had some sort of Rick has another plan behind the scenes. You know, like the whole gun thing where he had to go get a Glenn went and got a gun. Nobody else knew he was getting guns and he was going to take back the town. You know, he does this all the time. But sooner or later, I think it's going to come to a point where Rick is just the most untrusted person into this. I think Rick finally is going to snap. But really, is the story about Rick? I mean, what if something does happen to Rick? I mean, did they really base it on Rick?
Well, he's just been the focal point.
I mean, could you get rid of him as a focal point? Do you think the book would still flow?
Right now, you could.
Who would take over, though? If you think Andrew,
I'd say Carl. Listen to the way everybody's talking about Carl.
Listen to him, though.
The story could still be about him, whether or not he was the one that was the leader or things were just happening around him and the story was following him. But listen to the way that people at the podcast talk about Colin or Carl. Well, Colin too.
You talk about me behind my back.
That's after the podcast.
But it's like everybody loves Carl.
I don't love Carl.
Everybody talks about how interesting of a character he is, how much he's adapted to the situation, and how he's the perfect example of somebody who's lived with the zombie apocalypse.
I
think Carl just kills anybody that doesn't listen
Kirkman.
To him.
Image,
yeah. Carl to me, I don't like. I don't as much as I don't like Carl in the comic. I like him even less on the show.
Yes, much less on the show.
See, I hope like the last issue of The Walking Dead is Carl just killing everybody. I mean, that's just,
you know, actually,
like,
that would be a cool ending.
Like, not even as a zombie, just like running around with a pistol, just popping people, and then.
I could see that happening.
Then just takes himself out at the very end.
The interesting thing is. Previews, though, they had Walking Dead number 104, and they only used short, like, sentences for to describe it. And it's, the cover is Carl with, like, this AK-47. And he, all it says is, if you won't handle this, I will. So it shows you that they're going into a direction where Carl is becoming a bigger focal point. I think this is where he's finally going to kind of not just snap, but
oh, he's already snapped a couple of times.
Oh, yeah. He's...
I was going to say, Jenna.
But that's the thing. That's the interesting thing about Carl, as I was saying. Can you say that he actually, in the world that he's living in, can you say that he snapped?
No, but we can't, I mean.
We're looking at it as, he snapped because we're in a good world.
Yeah, well,
he killed that dude in the back of the van.
You can
the
never.
Kid, but the kid was a murderer in a world where they have nothing else.
So was Carl at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
But he was protecting the group.
But that's the point. He's protecting the group in a world where they have nothing, too. It's either tell that kid to get lost.
I guess in today's society, throw him in real society, what do you think?
It's tough for you to make.
But in that situation.
I don't know. I mean, you read these things like. And you think to yourself, like, oh, you know, what would happen? And then your power goes out for, like, 20 minutes. You're like, my Lord, this is torture. What
is going on? Oh, my God.
I can't take it.
Got to kill the cat.
What's going on? You know, I mean, it's so tough to imagine and even, like, try to, like, put yourself in that spot. Because, like I said, you know, you lose cable for 35 minutes. And you're, like, at your end of your, you know, especially if it's night and you're trying to read with, like, a can. Like, what the?
Yeah.
You're at the end of your rope like that, and you know. And now these people have been on the run for how long? I mean, I don't even know how long they've been on the run for.
Sounds like somebody needs to buy a generator.
I do. Yeah. I do. That's absolutely true. That has made my list many times of things I need.
You didn't want to read your comics by candlelight.
That's the thing, comics. That's what they're for.
Hey, I actually remember during that blizzard when we were out of power for two days. I read the Unwritten Trade by Flashlight.
Oh, by Flashlight. That's cool.
Well, technically it was a book light, but the book light doesn't really work on a comic. And I had to hold it to each panel as I'm reading it.
Oh, and the kids were running around in circles because they didn't know what to do.
They were asleep.
Who wrote Unwritten?
Mike Carey.
Mike Carey.
Well, somebody came in and they know him. And they're saying, oh, we know this comic writer, going on. And you're like, it's somebody... You know, local or somebody, and then they say Mike Carey. I'm like, oh, big Mike Carey. Not that I know the guy's size, but I'm like, stature.
Yeah. He's very well known.
Is he
in England?
I don't know.
Did they get him in here for a signing?
Sure. But it was just funny.
He does X-Men Legacy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or was.
He did for a while.
Joe, what'd you read?
I know you don't
read comics.
Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing?
Volume 1, Scott Snyder, Yana Kat-Kat.
Okay.
What
do you think?
And I loved it. Good. You know, I think I mentioned it before, but like what really pulled me in was the page structure. The way that Yana Kat-Kat lays out the panels it makes every page perfect for the printed format. It's a beautiful thing to look at.
And probably would not work well digitally. But what I enjoyed was the guy who does Grifter kind of tried to ape that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Especially on a two-page spread.
Yeah.
He'd have these wacky lines, but they wouldn't match up with the other side. And you're kind of like, well, am I supposed to read across or down? Or with Paquette stuff, it's clear how to...
The most
clear how you're supposed
to read. The most interesting thing about it is that It's like I said, it's perfect for the printed page and creates this wonderful thing to read in the printed format. And he does it all on a tablet computer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. He said that working without an inker, having the chance to have his own line get printed and, you know, it's 100% his vision is something that he liked.
Cool.
That's it.
Well, Matt doesn't like anything, so.
No, I hate
him. Chuck, did we go you? We hit you? Other than I know you don't like Venom. You made that abundantly clear. Okay.
You just shoved it down our throats.
I don't know. I guess I just wanted to bring some off about the Zero issues. I don't know if anybody else noticed it, but some of them seem like they're pretty short to me.
I agree.
Like, I think Batman was only like 10 or 11 pages. On the other hand, I read Batwoman last week, and what I liked about it was there was a lot of reading in it. I don't know if anyone else read it. I mean, if you just flip through it, you could tell that there's a lot of reading in this. I mean, it's
words?
Yeah, there's actual words.
Batwoman's always kind of wordy. Batwoman's been.
Yeah, but this one really, I mean, this one, I was just telling Donnie about it. I showed it to him, and he even said, you know, just by looking at it, you could tell. It just seemed... You know, nowadays it's, you know, it's $4 for a book. It's mostly art. $3.
Three for DC, four for Marvel.
What? That's an outrage. Why haven't we talked about
that? No, but I agree
yet?
With you on Swamp Thing and Animal Man. I thought they both felt very short.
Nightwing Zero is... I like the Nightwing Zero. It's pretty good.
That's a big truck moving awful fast down the road.
But then again, there wasn't much dialogue in that one either, though. It was mostly just art and... But I just think that it isn't just Batman, like you said, those two. It seems like they're really short. And I could do without the backup stories. And just why couldn't they just extend the main story so they give us these backup stories in any book, really? I really don't care much for backup stories. I mean,
I don't understand why they're doing them, because those have failed for both publishers
in
the past.
It has, but it's kind of funny because when they did it before, I remember there was, I don't want to say uproar, but there were people upset that they were ending it. I forget which one. I think it was the Adam backup story.
Well, there was the Jimmy Olsen one that everybody got upset about because they didn't finish it, and then they did the one shot.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know why they do it.
Some of the backup stories are okay, but to me, it's like another book to remember. You get to the end of Batman, and you're now like, oh, wait, there's this Alfred story. What was he doing last time? What was going on with Alfred and his dad and what? And it's just like something else. And it's only like 2 pages or 3 pages. And most of the stories are pretty good. They're not, I mean, like the Batman backup, the Pennyworth story wasn't bad. And the Justice League backup has been pretty good.
I don't know why they do it.
Yeah, I mean, I would kind of rather just have a one-shot of the whole thing put together and read it, but...
Or put it in DC Presents, DCU Presents.
Yeah, well, I think like you were saying I think that the Pennyworth stuff, I thought that was important to the story.
Yeah,
I thought that was neat, especially when you got to that one after the setup, and you're like, oh, okay.
Where would we get our Hawk and Dove stories if we did that to DC Presents?
Yes.
Go read good stuff from the past.
Has there ever been good Hawk and Dove?
I don't know. Tony says there was.
Okay. I think we're good. Doing previews next week.
Did Megan even say goodbye when she
left? Waved. She said later.
I think she said,
see you, wouldn't want to be you.
I think she said bye to the rest of
you. No, okay.
She was at the door. She kind of waved.
Yeah. I think she blew you a kiss.
We can mock her now.
Well, that's all right.
Who does she think she is? Running out.
I don't know.
If you show up for the putt, no.
No leaving early.
Pittsburgh Comics Podcast is 60 minutes. Actually, it is 68 minutes.
You're trying to take a guess. You're not Megan, so you can't psychically figure out
68 minutes of
the
podcast.
Times of things.
Okay.
It's not 30 and leave.
Well, we'll hit it again next week and see what's up.
All right.
Later. Spoon.
I'm sorry.